Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Mo H., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Walnut Creek, California. Today is Thursday, June 13th, the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 33, the first paragraph. This case contains a powerful lesson, and we'll be reading and commenting on that one paragraph only. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Mary Jane Z., the 12 Traditions, Karen B. The readers of the text are Dion R. and Kathy G. The share ID for Wednesday, yesterday, June 12th, the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting was 13,029. That is 13029. And for this morning's meeting, Thursday, June 13th, the 7 a.m. meeting is 13,032 or 13032. Our newcomer greeter is Kaylee R., and our announcements coordinator will be Janice P.M. Overeater OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals. Hang on. Okay. Who, through shared strength and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition, states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Mary Jane Z. to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Mary Jane.
Good morning. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive eaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. I pass.
Thank you, Mary Jane Z., and I will now ask Karen B. to read the 12 traditions. Karen.
Good morning. This is Karen B. in Northern Utah with the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thanks to everyone for being here this morning, and I pass.
And thank you, Karen B. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinent requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute, and once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to mute your phone again. And that is different than the mute button on your phone. Please do the star 1. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page 33. The first paragraph begins with, "This case contains a powerful lesson," and we'll read one paragraph only and keep our comments to that paragraph. And I will now ask Dion R. to begin. Good morning, Dion. Press star 1 to unmute your...
Good morning. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Oh, okay. Great, great, great. Hey, good morning. My name is Dion.
Dion, you are not clear. You're garbly.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Am I clear?
Yes, so go ahead and read. I'll let you know if it bleeps out, okay?
Okay. All right. Let me sit very still. This
is Dion, it's not working. Try it one more time, otherwise we'll need somebody else to do the reading for us.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
I can.
This case contains most of us.
You know, Dion, that isn't working. I'm going to have to get somebody else.
Oh, okay. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
My bad.
Yeah.
I'll try to go in another room, and maybe I can join the meeting later. My bad.
Okay. Thank you. Is there somebody else, one of our readers, Kathy G., could you possibly do that, Mary Jane?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Thanks, Mary Jane.
Good morning. This is Mary Jane Z., recovered in Kentucky. This case contains a powerful lesson. Most of us have believed that if we remained sober for a long stretch, we could thereafter drink normally. But here is a man who at 55 years found he was just where he had left off at 30. We have seen the truth demonstrated again and again. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. commencing to drink after a period of sobriety, we are in a short time as bad as ever. If we are planning to stop drinking, there must be no reservation of any kind, nor any lurking notion that someday we will be immune to alcohol. Well, this is a powerful lesson, and it's one that I got to experience and learn, because there were many times that I would diet, or even in the program, I would say, yeah, I got it. And I would go along, lose the weight, and then think, yeah, I can do this now. It won't hurt me. And I always found myself right back where I started from, going, how did this happen again? And I had to come to the point where I get it. I have no more lurking notion that I'm ever going to be immune to this stuff. It is off limits, skull and crossbones. It doesn't work. Nothing. I get it. And the way I practice that I get it is by working these steps every day, and by staying in this program, and by staying connected to my higher power and to my fellows. And that's because I basically, every time I realized I went back to the food, I was choosing the food as my higher power instead of my higher power. For a long time, I'd go, well, I'm powerless. And I kept being told, but you're not helpless. And I didn't understand it until one day it was like, wait a minute, I'm standing at a crossroads. One path leads to a power greater than myself, and the other path leads to the food. And I keep choosing that food, and I'm seeing that food as my power. And I'm basically sticking my tongue out at God every time I take a bite. And I finally had to concede that that was not the way, and that the way was to follow the rest of the steps and to get that connection to my higher power. And I just send so much hope and love and support to all of you on the line that are struggling, because it doesn't have to be a struggle. It just has to be a decision followed up by action. And there's a whole fellowship that is willing to support you on your journey. With that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Mary Jane Z, for stepping in there for us. And so just to remind everybody where we are, we're on the top of page 33, first paragraph. This case contains a powerful lesson, and I'll now take names of those who would like to share.
Alicia B.
John K.
Okay, I heard John K, unfortunately, but somebody was ahead of him.
Donna B.
Alicia P.
Donna B. I got Donna B. Who was that after Donna?
Des M.
Alicia P.
Alicia P. Is it Alicia?
Patty T.
Patty.
Yes, Alicia.
Alicia, L. A. P. Was it P?
Yeah, it was P. Like Paul.
Okay. All right, and Patty T. And then one more.
Dawn B.
Dawn B. All right. I have John K., Donna B., Des M., Alicia P., Patty T., and Dawn B. Good lineup. All right, here we go. John K.
Oh, good morning, Mo. John Kiernan, recovered compulsive eater in Los Angeles. I guess the loudest voice wins. I know I wasn't first. I apologize to whoever I jumped ahead of in line. This line, it's something I had to learn the hard way. That, you know, you can't build up abstinence points that you can use later towards screwing around with your food. I like I said, I had to learn that the hard way, you know. I heard a lady in a meeting once say, for every year of abstinence you get one extra second when you're thinking of picking up that first compulsive bite. I don't know if that's the right ratio, but I know there's something to it, you know. Because, you know, the thing that happened to me is you know, you come into program, at least I did, And all of a sudden, all the stuff that never made sense your entire life, why I got this great brain that can do so many things, but with this one thing, I can't. And then I'm in meetings and I'm reading the book and we're working and I realize, oh, look at all those lies my disease told me year after year that just weren't true. Now I get it. Now I'll never fall for those lies again, which I wouldn't. But the trouble is once you're in program, the disease won't use those lies anymore. It has to come up with a whole new batch of lies because it knows you're on guard against the original ones. And I didn't get that, you know. It used all of my knowledge about programming the disease against me, you know. It was like, I don't know if you guys remember, there's a book and a movie called The Andromeda Strain where scientists are trying to cure this disease, except it keeps mutating, and that's, to me, what my disease does. It takes all of my knowledge and uses it against me, and this one in particular. Hey, you've been in long enough. You know, you've got it now. You know what you got to do. Well, no, you know. The great thing about living in L.A. is I go to meetings with these people who have got, you know, 30, 40 years of abstinence, and what I see them doing is that they're doing the same thing they were doing when they were newly abstinent, and that's why they're abstinent for 30 or 40 years, you know. I remember I always heard somebody say, you know, addicts are the only people who, when they get into recovery, go, wow, I've been struggling for years without any hope, and now I found the answer. Okay, let me change it. You know, like we just don't get it. This is the thing that worked. Why in God's name would we want to mess around? And that's why that, you know, I've always said that there's this great line from the American Revolution, you know, the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. Well, the price of abstinence is eternal vigilance because it's always, the disease is always going to be there and always trying a new line. It'll keep trying new pitch lines and it'll be as subtle as it has to be imperceptible. And that's why I always have to just keep doing what I've been doing forever. If it works, why change it? And with that, I pass.
And thank you, John K. Donna B., followed by Des M.
Good morning. This is Donna B., recovered compulsive overeater in Denver, Colorado. This paragraph reminds me of a very dangerous time in my life. I was in the room. I had a long period of abstinence, but I was unhappy with my weight. I had not yet been relieved of the compulsion or the obsession with my body weight and with body dysmorphia. And I decided in my own self-will that I would go on a diet, which is very different than adhering to a food plan given to me by a registered dietitian. And I fell for one of those crazy bad diets and adhered to that crazy bad diet to the best of my ability. And I noticed that my intermittent volume eating was getting worse. On this bad diet, I could eat as much protein as I wanted. And one night, I ate an entire chuck roast. I'm married, so I affectionately call that night my night with Chuck. The diet ultimately led to more volume eating and more volume eating until the sugar just called to me. And every year for Passover, my children and I have a tradition of making a certain recipe. And we made it. They went to bed. And I proceeded to eat all of it. Its ingredients are, in essence, brown sugar, chocolate, and butter. And the next morning, I asked my husband, you know, what do I do? Do I tell the kids what I've done? Or should I just go to the grocery store and remake the whole thing? And he said, you have to tell the truth. So I sat with my children and I told them that I had eaten all this food. And my daughter is 11 and my son is 8, so they're old enough to get it. And my daughter said to me, but you don't eat sugar. And I said, well, I did. And after that, together as a family, and with the help of the program and with the help of my higher power and a recommitment to this program and a really honest dose of understanding that this disease is not just one faceted, it's very multifactorial, and all the aspects of my disease can take me back to the food. The obsession with weight, the obsession with exercise, the obsession with food, the obsession with sugar, the obsession with volume eating. I am not immune to any of those things. And all of those obsessions can take me out. Thank you for letting me share my path.
Thank you, Donna B. Des M., followed by Alicia P. Des, good morning.
Hi, good morning. This is Des M. Can I be heard well?
Yes, you can.
Awesome. Good morning. Thank you so much for your service. This is Des, recovery compulsive eater from Walsh, California, currently in California.
You're a little garbly, Des.
Be able to. I'm just super grateful.
Des.
Are you able to hear me?
Yeah, it's it's kind of garbled. There, you can get into a different place.
I'll go ahead and pass, Mo. Thank you.
All right, sorry, Des. All right. Alicia P., followed by Patty T.
Hello, can y'all hear me?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Hi, my name's Alicia P. Good morning, everybody. So I've been in the program for a couple years now, and I've had a track record of just kind of being here, there, not really getting this abstinence thing, not really nailing it down, relapse after relapse, but coming back, but definitely feeling much better in the rooms than outside of the rooms, for sure, getting way more peace and serenity than I ever have in life. I'm sitting here at day 4 of no sugar, no caffeine, none of my binge foods, and it's literally a miracle. But it's so true. Like, I have those moments where I have that thought, like, man, this is exhausting. All this work is just so exhausting. I don't like it. But then I immediately remind myself about how exhausting it was to be in the food. And I'm like, that's way more exhausting than this, and I'd way rather this. And then I found myself saying, I heard it on the lines one day, and I know that it was something that really impacted me, is I don't desire to eat like normal people. I desire to live like normal people. And if I want to live like normal people and have a normal life, then I have to work the program. And so when I have those thoughts of insanity of, oh, man, I just want this or want that or whatever, and I immediately think, no, you don't want that. You actually want a life. And so through working the program, you can get that life, you know. And also I have to know that not every second and minute of my life has to be exciting and just fun or whatever. And, you know, obviously I used to go to the food for fun, you know what I mean? So not every moment of my life has to be this thrilling moment, but maybe those are just the times that I really need to be humbled to God and obedient and following his will. And I kind of, the way I look at it is just, you know, if you go to a water park and you're sitting there at a lazy river and you're kind of just floating along in a rafter of higher power, and he's just moving you along in life, and you're not trying to fight against it, because if you do try to fight against it, you're literally going to go nowhere. You're sitting here trying to paddle upstream and it's going to be terrible. It's just going to suck. So you might as well just go with the flow and go with life and go with where higher power takes you, and just know that you're going to get wherever you're going to get safely because you're abstinent. You know, luckily I've had days that sucked because of the circumstances, but I know that I was like, but thank God I'm abstinent, you know. And to me that gave me almost like a peace and a security that I've never had before. And I'm just super grateful, and even last night was kind of rough because I was like, man, I find myself getting into this position of, everything is changing. And I feel like I can't really hold on to, like there's nothing for me to hold on to. Like I'm in a roller coaster and here I go. But I feel like the more I work the steps, the more I realize it's because I've been holding on to the wrong things, and I need to hold on to the words in the book. And so with that, I'll pass, and I'm so grateful to get to share. Y'all have a wonderful day. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, Alicia P. And Patty T, followed by Dawn B. Patty.
Hi, Mo. Thank you so much for your service, and good morning, everyone. You know, this is Patty T in Southern California, recovered today by the grace of God. And I have to say, I love this paragraph. It starts off with a promise right here. This case contains a powerful lesson. And then it ends with the lesson. There must be no reservation of any kind or any lurking notion that someday we will be immune to alcohol. No reservation, no hesitation of any kind, nor any lurking. And I looked up lurking, and I don't have a big book dictionary, but I do have Merriam-Webster. And lurking means, it's so weird, it means to be concealed but capable of being discovered, specifically to constitute a latent threat, to lie hidden. Lurking, to lie in wait in a place of concealment, especially for an evil purpose. And then it says here, a lurking notion. Notion means to a conception or impression of something known, experienced, or imagined, or a whim. So that's my disease, isn't it? My disease is the whim. That I can eat whatever it is that is my trigger food, whatever it is that I'm allergic to, and it will take care of the problem. It will be my solution. And because I haven't had it for however many days, weeks, months, years, it'll all be okay, right? But I've had that experience, thank you, God, over a six-year chronic relapse of understanding finally, without reservation, that this is a progressive disease, and I'm in a worse predicament every single time I try to do that, that I have to put it down, and I have to keep it down if I'm going to continue to live, prosper, and trudge this road to happy destiny, because that's what this gives us. And I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Patty T. Dawn B., before we go to Dawn, I just want to remind everybody where we're at. We're on page 33, top of the page. This case contains a powerful lesson, and we're commenting on that one paragraph only. And after Dawn, I'll take some more names. Okay, Dawn, you're on.
Good morning. This is Dawn B. from Southern California, recovered compulsive overeater by the grace and mercy of God. And it is great to be on the line this morning. Today is actually my 60th belly button birthday. And my daughter said to me last night, she said, well, you're going to have cake tomorrow, right? Aren't you going to have some kind of cake or some kind of dessert or something? And I said, no, I'm not going to do that. And then she kept on, well, but it's your birthday, you know. You're turning 60. It's a very special day. Aren't you going to be having something, you know, dessert? And I said, no. And anyway, it was just, it's just a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing just to be so not only released from the draw, from the enticement of my old binge foods, but to be abstinent and to be doing so happily. I mean, giddy, happily, to be abstinent. And what a miracle of this program. Once an alcoholic, as it says in the paragraph, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Once I discover those alcoholic foods and what they are, and I abstain from them, I experience an amazing sense of like an oasis from the cravings and the allergy. And but with the mental obsession, I know that this, the just abstaining will not keep me from the disease. The mental obsession comes back and my mind makes up all these kinds of lies of why I can go back. The gentleman in the paragraph, you know, having abstained for so long, there's all kinds of lies that my brain will come up with to try to tell myself that it's okay. And because it's coming from my own voice, it sounds like it should be believable. But to, for myself, to recognize that anything that I come up with is simply my disease talking. And what a gift it is to be at 60 years old. My grandfather died of this disease in his 60s, his early 60s, died of obesity and also alcoholism. And in his honor of his memory, I am out here, got up at a little after 5. I'm out the door, out walking and jogging. And in his, in the honor of his memory, I celebrate that I had opportunities that he did not have. I have this program and what a beautiful gift it is. And that today is just like any other day. I get up, I do my prayers, I ask God to direct my thinking. I turn this day, my will, and my life over to the care of a power much greater than me. And I ask only for knowledge of my higher power's will and the ability to carry that out. And I ask for the ability to be of service to others. What a gift. What a beautiful thing. Thank you so much. And I pass.
Well, thank you, Dawn B. And happy birthday to you. Happy belly button birthday. All right. I'm up for more names.
Deanna.
Carrie
W.
All right, wait. I got Dion R. Who was after Dion?
Lisa H.
Carrie
Kara.
Donna
Lisa
W.
H.
Donna
Rob
W.
G.
Carrie K. B.
L. Cherry.
Roz.
Roz.
Jean J.
Jean J. Let's stop there. Sorry, I didn't hear all of you. Roz G. Cherry K. B. And Donna W. All right, Dion R. Lisa H. Donna W. Cherry K. B. Roz G. Jean J. That's what I heard, and if we have time, we'll squeeze in some more. First up, Dion R., followed by Lisa H. Let's try it again, Dion.
Hi, good morning. I'll try it again.
Much better.
Okay, we'll see. If not, I'll get to listen today from my higher power. Today, just grateful for hearing and being able to share and my higher power. I think, God, how can I use this instead to carry the message, you know, and the message I got and what right in the middle of the paragraph, once a pickle, always a pickle, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic, once a compulsive overeater, definitely always a compulsive overeater, no matter what, whether rain, shine, or snow, tragedy, I'm still a compulsive overeater. And with that, I know I need to depend on my higher power all the time, all the time. I have to go to him and see how can I be of service in whatever situation I'm in today to be of maximum usefulness to you and my fellows. That's the only reason why I'm here. And that's a gift in why I'm here. To know that I am a pitbull. I can't become a cucumber again, as they say. You know, I am grateful, recovering. Over either, and with that, I'm going to pass, you know, allow someone else to share. Take care.
Well, thank you, Dion R., for getting back to us. All right, Lisa H., followed by Donna W. Lisa. Press star one, Lisa. I thought I heard a Lisa H.
I'm sorry about that. I had unmuted previously. This is Lisa H. with from Steilacoom, Washington, and I think this might be the only second time that I've spoken on this. I'm really new in this program, but I've been in this book for a long time because I'm coming up on 6 years in another program, and I have absolutely no reservations that I can't ever participate in that other thing that I used to do, but I continue to struggle with this, and this piece really, this paragraph, you know, I dealt with weight gain my whole life, and it was a long roller coaster, like many of you have described, and I've gone all the way to every length of trying every possible thing that there was, on up to spending $30,000 to have, you know, gastric bypass surgery. Lost 115 pounds inside of a year, didn't eat any sugar for a year, and then slowly started introducing the alcoholic foods, as you refer to them, back into my diet, and you know, gained about half the weight back. And and the struggle has been to realize and come to realize that this is not about my weight, that it's about my obsession and thinking that I can eat like normal people or wanting to eat like normal people. And I think someone else referenced that earlier too. And I really have to say, I really appreciate everything that everybody is sharing on the line. And I appreciate this meeting is happening every morning and that I can tune in and listen. That's the first thing I do every morning, is sit down and listen to this meeting. And well, after I go for a walk with my dog, but you know, there's some people that have done the Sunday editions, John Kay and a few others that I've listened to. And I just really, it's amazing to hear the stories and try to make the comparison to my other recovery to this recovery and to try and get my head wrapped around it that I can't eat like a normal person. And the joke that I heard or the line that I heard was that I don't really want to eat like a normal person. I just want to not have the consequences. And I was just on a 5-day trip down into California on the coast and driving, and it was beautiful and it was wonderful. And staying at bed and breakfast. And of course they've got the cookies sitting there on the thing. And, you know, I went to bed that one night and I laid there wanting to get up and go eat those cookies, you know? And, it's just amazing because it was just a reminder to me that this is this obsession of my mind that isn't going away, that I get a little bit of reprieve and I feel like I'm getting strong, but that I am only as good as my daily contact with God and trying to make a difference in this this adventure of sobriety, or not sobriety, but recovery from food. So anyway, I'm just really new at this, and this era and makes me nervous to even talk. But I'm just really grateful for everybody who's on the line and being able to share. And I appreciate everybody. Thank you so much. I'll pass.
Well, thank you, Lisa H. Welcome to the line. Donna W., followed by Sherry K.B.
Thanks, Mo. This is Donna W. calling in from Palo Alto, California. So grateful to be abstinent and recovered for today and to be on the lines. And, yeah, you know, I worked this program for many years to get to my, you know, for weight management. And I would get to, I would lose the weight and then I would get cocky and think, okay, I got this now. And then I would gain some back. I was always working my program, so I never, and I wouldn't even call it a relapse, but it was all the self-reliance, the cockiness. It was like, okay, you know, I lost the weight. I can do this now, all that self-reliance. And so, you know, I did that for many years, and I was very much white-knuckling my weight. Like, okay, God, you can manage the food, but I'm going to manage my weight, because I was too scared to let go. And then probably about 2-3 years ago, finally started to get like, oh, this is a spiritual program. You know, it's about a conscious contact with God. It's not just about being in a healthy body weight. You know, that's a important part of it. But, it doesn't matter. You know, it's what I eat. It's whether I, you know, it's how I stay in contact with God. And when I eat, it takes me out. So I started finally realizing that. And then I also worked the 12 steps around my body and my weight, and I'm starting to trust that God can manage my weight. So that had a profound impact. I mean, really, anything that's troubling us, work the 12 steps on it, and it's like, it's amazing. So, you know, I still feel like when things aren't going well in my life, then I start going into self-attack, and I feel fat, and I feel like I got to manage my weight to be in control, that I'm remembering, oh, yeah, God manages my weight now. And then there's been some talk yesterday and today about cakes to celebrate things like birthdays and weddings. And you know what? I have celebrated a lot of birthdays, never even thought about cake. It just isn't on the, it doesn't equal celebration anymore. And I got married 9 years ago, abstinently, 9.5 years ago, abstinently. We didn't have a wedding cake. No one even said a word yet. We didn't have a cake. We had some cookies in the corner there. I never even saw them. And, you know, I was doing outreach calls minutes before the ceremony began, and I'm just so grateful to be in this program today and to remember that I do have a loving and reliable higher power, and I don't have to figure it all out just for today. Thanks a lot. I pass.
Thank you, Donna W. Sherry KB, followed by Roz G. Sherry, Good morning.
Good morning, Mo. Good morning, everybody. Yeah. It's Sherry KB in Northern California. Very grateful, recovered compulsive reader. Thank you so much for your service, Mo. Good to hear you on Thursday. Mm-hmm. And everybody on the line, Team Thursday. I'm just going to piggyback on a lot of what people said, but, you know, what's really jumping out at me is lurking, the word lurking. Mm-hmm. And I love looking up the words in the Big Book Dictionary because it really helps with this book. What it says about lurking, and this is what gets me, it says unobserved, unnoticed, hidden, lying in wait as in ambush. So to me, wow, that definitely describes my disease. It is lying in wait for me and wants to ambush me. And that, you know, being a recovered person, my disease will still try to get in there telling me, and I can be face down in my disease still, but not in the food. I don't have to be in the food to be in my disease. That's what because my disease will tell me I'm not doing this good enough, I'm not working it hard enough, I'm not doing this, I'm not doing that, you know. You might as well just give it up, give in. You know, it does that, even being a recovered person. So the difference, though, is that I know that the mental obsession and the mental twist and the mental blank spot are still there. It's never going to go away. I am recovered, but I'm never cured from this. And so I know that's why I have to stay close to my higher power. I have to stay close, working these steps every day as if my hair is on fire, is what people say. I really don't like my hair on fire or drowning, but I will run up the canyon with you and all of you together, wild horses running up a canyon, like going somewhere, like to our higher power, because I just know that there's days that even though recovered and I do a lot of work, sometimes that disease will get in there and just tell me I'm not doing it good enough. And then why not just eat a little something, because it'll make you feel better. But I do know that, you know, my higher power makes me feel a lot better than my disease ever could or ever will. But there's still that lurking, there's still that reservation in there that will come up even as a recovered person, because you know, I don't got this thing, I don't have it, I will never have it, but I know that with my higher power's help that I'll be okay, because I can't do this without my higher power, because, again, my higher power is the only one that can relieve the mental obsession. I cannot. I can put the food down. I'm responsible for that. But the rest of it and working the steps, that's how I stay connected and stay unblocked from my higher power, by working these steps, that when I see that disease coming up in my thinking, I can check in, obviously, with my higher power and with other people on the line, because I have people call me a lot saying, do you really think I'm abstinent? Do you think this and that? And I always ask them, what do you and your higher power think? That's what's really important. What do you and higher power think? Take it to your quiet time. Ask your higher power. Because this disease is always going to be there no matter what. And I pass. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Sherry KB. Right on. Roz G. followed by Jean J.
Good morning. I'm Roz G, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Los Angeles, and I am so much like the previous share. I am not fully convinced. I'm looking for the word here. What I want to say is that, yes, I'm fully convinced, but then there's that mental blank spot that comes up a lot. And so what I know doesn't mean anything. Even with all the knowledge of things that I have in life and wisdom, and I'm 55, I have the disease of compulsive overeating. And sometimes I forget that. But what keeps me in line is the actions that I take. It's not a program of thinking for me, because if I start to think, I'm doomed. And for me, that's a lot of humility. I'm a very proud person. And so, like, you know, I've heard in the other shares, is that I have to take the actions. That's what saves my butt. Getting up in the morning, asking God to direct my thinking before I do anything, and sitting in that meditation time and asking God for the right thought or action, and working with other people, and every day and going to bed at night and getting on. I use the OA app for the nightly review. It's so cool. I love that tool. And that's basically what reminds me is the actions that I take, because none of the thinking that I do ever works. And I've learned that too many times from too many relapses. And I've, you know, due to my over-exercising, I've had surgery on my heel, surgery on my shoulder, and today I'm going in to look at my knees. I'm not over-exercising anymore, but I believe that I have battle scars from, you know, being a exercise bulimic. So today I'm seeing my primary care physician, and I'm going to ask her for a referral to a registered dietitian. I am using the Dignity of Choice food plan, but I'd really like to hone it down to me personally after seeing a doctor, taking more action. I thank God for knowing things, but I really don't trust me and my disease, and so I take the actions. And I pass. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Roz G. And Jean J., you're up. Press star one, Jean. Can't hear you yet.
Here I am, Jean J.
There you are.
Portland.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks, everybody here, making the meeting today. Jean J. in Portland, Oregon. So, yes, the last sentence of this paragraph, of course, no reservation of any kind or any lurking notion. Lurking notion. Oh, my gosh. Lurking notion is, they were my best buddies, like in decades of laboring in the torment of the disease. And the only way I'm free today, and I'm very grateful to report, is that I work three different, I don't know if it's okay to say, correct me if I'm out of line, three different 12-step programs to do it. Like vision, I mean, if we're a 12-step, I don't know, big book step study, an in-person OA in my hometown, because I need to go and see people, and then a weighed and measured food plan program. And when I get away from the weighed and measured, and I don't like the weighed and measured, and I don't like this about that program, I've tried them all. But when I decide that I'm going to get away and I'm going to get this figured out on my own, it just, I am on a scale of 1 to 10, definitely a 10 addict. So there's no question that I was born into addiction. My parents, father alcoholic, mother foodie, goes back generations. So nature, nurture, I've got it. And so I have to take all the steps that are suggested. And in so doing, it's such a relief because I'm basically doing step 3 and step 10 and 11 and 12. I'm turning my will over and allowing, I'm letting go of the steering wheel enough so that a power greater than myself can, you know, this perfect chauffeur that I've always wanted can do the driving. Why do I resist that so? But when I'm in this strong place with the food, I don't fight and struggle, and I do kind of sit back and check out the ride. And I discover two things, that I have enough and that there is enough time. And it's a new revolutionary space for me to live in as an addict who has been kind of hunkered down for the count for so many eons. And so glad to be here, everybody. It's just a miracle. And I'll pass.
Thank you, Jean J. We have time for about a 2-minute quick share if anybody would like to take that last slot. Anybody's ready?
Mariana D.
Okay, you got it, Mariana. I'll give you 2 minutes.
Wonderful. Thank you. Amazing shares today. I'm just sitting here listening, and it's funny. I had this visual pop up in my head, and I want to share it. So when I heard a definition of lurking as ambushing, I just pictured when you're like watching a horror movie, which I don't do often, but you know, and someone comes home and there's something lurking in the house and we all see it as the audience, but that person is clueless. And I think, oh my gosh, what a great analogy of like food lurking and like kind of there in the shadows, and then, you know, somehow we're drawn to it, or, you know, maybe it catches us by surprise because we're not being present. But like, what a gift. Like, I don't have to wait till Monday morning to start something I've seen in a magazine, or search and be tortured by like what's out there that's going to help me. Like, I already know in my soul that I have what I need. And it's that action, taking that action. And the nice thing is, I can't tell you how many times I've been thinking of food and I get a phone call from a fellow or something happens. So even if I'm not in a place to turn to my higher power right then because I hadn't thought of it, I can call a fellow and most likely they're not going to be in that same place, because I feel like that cunning, baffling place kind of pops in and out, so it's not always there. But we have, like, we have the ability to call someone who's most likely not in that place, and we can listen, and they can help us get through that place. So, what a gift! And so that's all I have. I'm just really grateful and so happy to hear these shares. Thank you. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Mariana. And with that, we will now close this meeting with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And I will now ask Kathy G. to read a vision for you.
Thanks, Mo. Hello, everyone. It's Kathy G., a recovered compulsive overeater in Illinois. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you can't transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.